In making this presentation and thinking through our work for the next 3 years, we were highly influenced by what we heard from our leadership. We took key messages from the president of the country when he delivered the State of the Nation address, speaking about minimizing exports, which to us means that we need to increase production and be competitive, speaking towards creating decent work, which talks to investing in agriculture in order to create decent work. Speaking about a comprehensive rural development strategy linked to land and agrarian reform and food security, which to me talks to ensuring that the land that we transfer starts to work. And obviously strengthening regional integration. Our minister spoke about investing in agro-processing as well as expanding international markets for producers. Our DG spoke about concluding the review of the Agricultural Marketing Act, restructuring of the fresh produce market in South Africa, as well as finding a way of assisting fresh, particularly black fresh produce farmers in finding a way where they could sell their produce. Those messages were very important to us, and I will talk to some of those things when I make this presentation. Before I start, to me, agriculture plays four important roles. The backwards and forward linkages that it creates with the rest of the economy in terms of buying of inputs and supplying of raw materials for the rest of the economy to function, earning of foreign exchange through exports, creation of employment, and provision of food and food security. To us, those are the four roles that agriculture plays. And I will talk to some of those roles and the role that the ANC plays in ensuring that that happens. Let me start by food food security. In 2002, South Africa faced a problem in terms of high food price inflation, and obviously this house felt that something needed to be done, and the minister back then created a food price monitoring committee that was housed within the NANC. That committee functions is to analyze and review food prices on a quarterly basis and produce what we call the urban and rural food price trends that we release on a quarterly basis, as well as an annual food cost review. We use that by looking at data that we collect from StatsSA as well as AC Nielsen. This will be data from all supermarkets throughout the country. We also collect data from 180 stores in deep rural areas using the Provincial Department of Agriculture staff. Through those two sets of data, we produce the urban and rural food price trends on a quarterly basis, as well as the annual food cost review. That reviews and tells you what is happening in terms of food price inflation. You might be interested to find out as to over the past year or so, what are some of the global drivers of food price inflation. And I'm going to go very quickly through this because this slide has been used a couple of times. If you look at wheat, you are looking at weather shocks. Oilseed prices in terms of soybean and other oilseeds, you are looking at, obviously, increase in demand from Asia. Again, if you look at just trades in general, a declining stock, financial speculation, you look at agriculture in totality, oil prices have an impact on the price. You look at rice and wheat, due to the fact that there are some major role players in terms of countries that are major producers, you find that export restrictions, more especially in Argentina and India, have played a role in the price of rice. So this will be some of your global drivers in terms of your food price inflation. We believe that if you look at this since the second quarter of 2008, things have started to look much better, more especially in terms of commodity prices. The increases that we saw in the beginning of 2007, 2008, towards the end of 2008 and beginning of 2009, things are looking much better. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that the price of food is cheaper. If you look at the retail price of food, you will find that it peaked in August of 2008, and we are now seeing the retail price inflation of food at 13.7%, which is much better than last year. Again, I would stress that when price of commodities go down, that doesn't necessarily translate into price of food going down immediately at the retail level. So there's always a time lag with that. And again, I mean, the fact that commodity prices are coming down doesn't necessarily mean that the price of food is cheaper. That is still a concern. I think if you look at South Africa itself and say what are some of the issues and some of the challenges we face when you're talking generally on in terms of the price of food. Obviously, weather conditions will affect the size of our crop, more especially when you talk about grain and wheat. The challenges that we face in terms of implementation of land reform will have some impact in terms of the price of the size of the crop and the price of food. We believe that the work that the Competition Commission is starting to do in terms of investigating most of the major agricultural value chains is important, and we believe that a lot more focus on the import side as well as the retail side will add will open up a lot of areas that we need to look at in terms of improving the efficiency of those value chains. We have seen work that some of the major retailers like Pick n Pay and Shoprite had done with their suppliers in terms of finding ways of cutting the price of products that they supply to supermarkets, and we think that will also contribute in terms of finding ways of reducing the price of food. Our future outlook and policy option, I'm not going to talk to this slide. I however think that if you look at agriculture now up until probably the beginning 2010-2011, you will find that most commodity prices will move sideways. Therefore, price of most of your major food products will move sideways. I think that the problem we had in 2007 we'll have in 2011. So we have a window of 2 years to figure out how we sort this out. If we continue not to increase the production of wheat, for argument's sake, and continue to produce what we produce now, the price of bread will go up in 2011. So if we produce 12.5 million tons of maize in 2011, we might have a problem with the price of maize meal. But we have a 2-year window to figure out how do you bring additional hectares of land into production. And if we don't take advantage of this two-year window, we might have a problem again. Just talking a little bit about rural food price monitoring. As I said, we have about 183 rural outlets throughout the country, and we monitor 26 food items. We do this in collaboration with the Provincial Department of Agriculture and ZSA. We have a number of challenges that we're addressing with the department in terms of how do we improve the efficiency in terms of collection and the quality of data that is collected. And I hope that over time we'll be able to sort that out and get a much better picture in terms of how the poor and rural areas are affected by food price inflation. The results of this work in terms of food price work at threefold: production of the annual food cost review, food price trends, as well as research work looking at specific problems and challenges that we face, and what is it that can be done to improve the efficiency of specific value chains to address specific challenges. So we, on a regular basis, come up with reports that we produce and that have recommendations that the department or government as a whole could do to address the challenge. For argument's sake, last year there was detailed work that was done in terms of functioning of the futures markets for grains and oilseed. Very clear recommendations in terms of what the JSC could come up with to improve the efficiency in terms of how the JSC works. And those recommendations are being implemented, and they were very happy with it. The department, as we speak, it's implementing work in terms of how national fresh produce markets should function. And then because that is very important in terms of past discovery and ensuring that those farmers who can't sell through supermarkets are able to market their produce. We're very happy with it. We did work and came up with recommendations in terms of the Section 7 committee report on the wheat to bread value chain. That was completed beginning of this year, and number of very important recommendations that if I implemented, we might be able to sort out some of the problems we have in terms of bread. And we hope the implementation of those recommendations will proceed smoothly. Let me then move to the second part of our work, which is the efficiency of marketing of agricultural products. I have provided a number of tables that looks into income that industry generates to pay for certain functions that they believe are important in terms of improving the efficiency of the sector. If you look at levy income that we assisted various industry in South Africa to generate in 2008, that amount was just under 280 million. This is money that industry collects from farmers and spend on its own. It's not money that the NMC spent. That money was spent on very important functions: transformation, export promotion, research. Research is money that goes to the ARC mainly. Information and industrializing, product development, local promotion, and consumer education. To give an example in terms of export promotion and market access, we did the fruit industry, more specifically the plum industry, did work to promote plums in the UK and Germany last year. They got 10 million from the International Marketing Council and got 4 million from specialty measures. Through that campaign, they were able to raise the volume of plants sold in the UK by over 40%. And this is at the time when most of the other fruit kinds were struggling to sell. Okay, to me this is important because if if an industry is able to increase the volume of sales by over 40%, then it's a lot more money to farmers, and farmers are able to grow their orchards, employ a lot more people, and foreign exchange. In Germany, a number of supermarkets mentioned the increase in terms of sales of South African plums, most of them recording over 10%, 10 or more percent in terms of volume of sales. So this year, we will work on getting the minister to approve the export promotion levy on apples, pears, apricots, nectarines, and peaches. And we'll spend about 20 million promoting those fruit kinds in the UK and Germany. And I hope that as time goes on, for argument's sake, if you look at other countries that we compete with, if you go to Chile, Argentina, and Australia, if industry spends 20 million promoting its products, government will match them rent for rent. If we match that industry rent for rent, then we'll be able to promote those food kinds in a lot more countries, increase the volume of exports, a lot more money into farmers, a lot more jobs created. There are a whole lot of other industries that have applied for levies, and we're working on those this year. Poultry industry, and I've listed all of them there. I'm not going to talk to them, but those are the levy applications that we'll be dealing with this year. I thought I should put in this slide just to answer one of the issues that always comes up in terms of our trade and our SA trade in agriculture and food products, and really just to highlight one thing. If you look at our South African primary agricultural trade, when you're just looking at primary products, you will see that we are not necessarily a net importer of agricultural primary products. We are a net importer of processed agricultural products. That's where our trade deficit is on the negative. But when it comes to primary agricultural products, we don't necessarily have a problem. It's when it comes to the processed products that we have a problem. So I thought I should put those three slides to highlight that issue. And looking at products that we mainly import, you find that it's wheat, it's kidney beans, cotton, and let me talk to cotton a little bit. In 10 years ago, South Africa used to plant over 200,000 hectares of cotton under irrigation. And South Africa. And there was a lot more undergrounded. Now, in total, we probably don't plant anything close to 15,000 hectares. It tells you there's something wrong there. And there are, I think most of the cotton producers who have accepted the fact that as the government, we don't think that cotton is of strategic importance. We're not going to protect it, and it will die, and we'll import all cotton link that we need to import. Yeah, that's right. So that's a challenge that in that industry faces. And the job creation associated to that, the fact that we have settled a lot of small cotton producers in Makatini and other areas who can't sell their cotton. I find it quite interesting that we import just under 500 million worth of kidney beans when we have areas like Ngoha and Kamata that are ideal for kidney bean production. And we need to figure out how we could ensure that we at least get those small farmers or areas that are ideal for those products to produce. Again, if you look at food products and the ones that we import, rice, very little we can do about it. Whiskey is very little that we can do about those products. And let me then come to work that we do specifically for black farmers. In terms of the levies levy money that is collected by industry, we have very clear guidelines of how that should be spent. And one of the guidelines is that 20% of the money that is collected on an annual basis should be spent on work that benefits black farmers. So we have we monitor that and ensure that that happens. We have developed guidelines to explain as to how that should be spent and what we believe are important things that the industry should do. So those things talk to enterprise development schemes, skills development and training, work in terms of transformation monitoring, and helping people who could go into managerial position within the industries. And then we're very clear and we ensure that those industries that don't adhere to these guidelines don't get their levies renewed when they expire. So this is very important to us. And I might just say some of the industries, if you look at the grain industry, for argument's sake, has developed a marketing scheme that supports black grain farmers who don't necessarily have title deed to use the scheme as collateral when they raise production finance. And the Department of Agriculture is working very well with the grain industry in ensuring that that scheme works and a lot more farmers benefit out of it. We have a number of training courses that NMC managed training courses. We have a 5-day business development course that we do with Stellenbosch University and Cornell University. This benefits on an annual basis 80 agribusinesses throughout Africa, and the forecast is people spend a week talking to professionals within those two universities and other companies on marketing-related issues. We also have a course that we call Agbiz Training Course that is tailor-made for women. About 30 women participate on this course. We do this as well with Stellenbosch and Cornell University. And it's really tailor-made for women agribusinesses in South Africa. We have an export promotion program that is threefold. We do this with the Department of Trade and Industry as well as an institution called Agri Academy. We identify those fruit farmers who are export ready and provide training to them in terms of what it is like to export and what is it that you should understand. Once we have trained them, we then take them to mainly Europe on an exposure trip to speak to some of the supermarkets and some of the food buyers in Europe and get them to interact with people who actually buy their fruit and get to understand what is it that they want in order for them to buy a lot more. Once they are back, and we have an understanding as to what it is that they could improve in their farming operations, we then have a program that we do with COMAC where we help them in terms of certification, either Eurogrep or any certification program that buyer might have demanded. Finally, Chair, I will talk to a unit that we created last year. This unit deals with industry trusts. As you remember, when we deregulated, a number of industries created trusts, and those trusts inherited assets that were owned by control boards. Within those trusts, you have what you call ministerial trustees and trustees that represent the rights of the industry. I have given you a table that details the value of assets inherited and the current value. These 2007 figures were finalized on the 2008 figures. That will be much lower than this because of the fact that the financial markets last year didn't do as well as we had expected. There are a number of challenges. One fact that when you have trust, the trustees are governed by trust deed, and if you are to ensure that work gets done in the right way, you need to appoint the right people. We have challenges in terms of appointing the right people and the quality of people who are representing ourselves and the minister in terms of ministerial trustees. And the second challenge is that when this trust was set up, issues relating to Agri-BEE in 1993, 94, 95 were still fairly new. And some of the trustees don't necessarily have that as an objective in terms of those things that they should fund. So those are the challenges that we're trying to sort out. Again, there are challenges in terms of funding of some of the trusts because the amount of money that they have is not enough to effect change within the industries that they work. We have a legal opinion as to how we could do that whilst we are busy coming up with a new marketing act, and we hope that once we finalize the marketing act, govern and that act will also govern a little bit as to how trust should operate. Lastly, I'm not going to talk to the table, but I have given the strategic objectives of the Marketing Act and the objectives of the NMC for this year and the 3 years, the goals as well as the key performance indicators for each and every strategic objective. I have 4 pages on that, and I'm not going to talk to that. I'll answer questions if there are any on those. Our total income is just over 27 million, and we spend about 14 million of that on salaries and payment of council members' time, 6 million administration, and then just over 6 million on other operational expenses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That was a presentation by Mr. Bulana, who is the CEO of the National Agriculture Marketing Council. I must also mention that when we invited the Competition Commission, naturally that's a competence that falls under TTI, trading industry. So we also do have a gentleman from TTI and the lady there. She's from TGI. And also we did invite extend an invitation to the consumer protection. I'm not sure whether we do have anybody. Again, that will fall under TGI as well. Do you have anybody from consumer protection here? Or are you also coming?
I am from the Office of Consumer Protection at the DTI.
Okay. So the lady is the overall from the DTI office, as a parliamentary liaison office. And also we did extend an invitation from the Consumer Forum. Anybody from that institution? An advocacy group? They are coming. The reason why we invited them, or rather extended an invitation to them, is that we also need to be assisted ourselves. These are the groups that are intimately, on a day-to-day basis, involved in the matters that deal with the price, you know, fixing and related issues. So so that if we are going to be cheated by any of these groups that are going to present, or if we are going to be getting any little information, we can get more information through the system, so to speak. So I thought, let me just also make a note of that as well, so that we don't get to be shocked to see many other faces and begin to ask questions as to what are these faces here for. So in a nutshell, that's the issue. Okay, that is a report, and again, in the main, the brief and the thrust of these two reports have so much to do with price fixing and price-related issues. We've just heard Mr. Ramakulana, and then we shall open the floor for questions.
Since the issues are very much interrelated, can we also hear the Competitions Commission, and then we put questions to both of them after that presentation? Maybe also in view of the fact that we need to be out here by at least 10 to 12.
Okay. Are we fine with that? Okay. Are you ready? While he is setting himself up, let us ask questions that need to, or rather require, clarity. Any such questions that require just simple clarity? What did you mean by this? What is meant by that? And those kinds of things. Okay, Mr. Davidson? Mr. Abram? Can we search all of that outside of the meeting? And perhaps to avoid any disturbances. Thanks.
Chair, just a
Mr.
quick
Mr.
one
Mr.
to Mr. Ramabulana.
Mr. Kerekulta.
Sorry.
Not you, sir.
Oh, sorry. Thank you,
Chairperson. In fact, from the presentation by Mr. Ramabulana, a few things that I felt so interested in hearing is making mention of the sale of cotton or the cotton production. I understand seemingly the small scale farmers that have been dealing with this sort of abandoned it and sort of left for, I say, seeking jobs in town and around cities. Is there anything that the research group has done in sort of advising the Department of Agriculture that they should deal more on sort of encouraging people to focus more on small scale farming in rural areas rather than going for jobs around cities and towns, firstly. And again, the dimension of this crisis. I understand there is a production that we have in our country, which is sugar, which seems to be more expensive for us as South Africans as compared to our neighboring states. When you go outside of South Africa, you find that sugar prices are a bit lower than what they are in South Africa. And what causes it? That's my question.
Chair, this is not my exhaustive list, but let me just fire off quickly. Chair, Mr. Ramabulana asked that how do we bring additional hectares into production? That's what he asked. Now, I just want to tell him and the DG of Agriculture, I believe that Agriculture has made some studies, conducted some studies, with regard to the possibility of bringing more land into production through irrigation. And I think this study was conducted over 45,000 hectares or something that can be brought on. But of course, it needs massive costs in terms of providing the necessary infrastructure. And all I want to advise the department is that I spoke in Parliament on this, and Minister Trevor Manuel then sent me a note And he said that, yes, if there is these possibilities, why doesn't the department come forward with a plan? Because it's major investment. And I want to suggest that the department dusts off those reports and comes forward with those plans, because it will, on the one hand, increase production. On the other, it will empower a numerous chain of people. Because, and you will be able to get people to sustain themselves on smaller pieces of land, because they'll be able to have two or three crops a year. So I want to suggest that you look at that. I think the areas that were mentioned that I'm aware of is Lusikisiki, Taungs, and these places. But of course, before you can get that land on stream, you need to harness the water resources. There are studies that have already been conducted. The cost factor is known, although costs do increase. So I just want to leave that thought with you. Chair, if there's still a bit of time before the gentleman is ready, may I also just talk about this whole issue of the price collusion and the fines that have been paid, that have been levied by the Competition Commission. And what one hears is that no real benefit out of those fines is ventilated through to the broad population, the people that were wronged in terms of this of the price collusion. And the one that comes to mind is naturally the massive fines that the bakers had to pay. Now again, Chair, you had in the past, in small little dorpies, you had the local bakery. And the local bakery provided for the needs of the local people. It is, you know, when I was young, even up to recently, even after I got married, that's how it was. It's these days that you have to go to supermarkets and find these wrapped up, ready sliced stuff, which you didn't have in those days. Now, I believe that it can bring down the cost of a staple food like bread if we can promote these small little bakeries. And it can also be a vehicle whereby we can bring on stream the emerging people. So I just want to leave these thoughts, whether we shouldn't have some or other mechanism, some other machinery. Of course, DTI gets involved here too. There's some funding that can be made available to help such people. I believe we can do a lot. I see the gentleman is ready, Chair. Thank you.
Can we have a feedback from Marketing Council?
Okay, Chair. Thank you, Chair. These are very difficult questions. I think just looking into cotton, as long as the price, the international price of cotton is not right, and we don't as a country decide that it's of strategic importance and will protect it, then a lot more cotton farmers will stop producing. It's as simple as that. So you need a good tariff regime, and you need to say it's of strategic importance, we're going to subsidize it, or we're going to figure out how we protect it. It's as simple as that. So, I mean, unfortunately, that is not the route that we have as a country decided to take. I know that the cotton industry met with the deputy minister and the DG about 2 or 3 weeks ago to raise some of the proposals as to how do we at least save what we have and start growing from there. And I hope that we will decide that it's of strategic importance and we need to protect it. Because to me, I find it strange that we can protect the makers of clothes, but we don't support farmers. We protect one half of the value chain and we don't protect the other half. To me, it's a bit strange. I don't understand that. And I hope that over time we'll figure out how to sort that. Number two, in terms of sugar has a different act, and it's managed by DTI, not agriculture. And in terms of that act and the pricing formula, you find that sugar outside South Africa is more expensive than here. I can't really explain that, but it's it's one of those things that if cotton had its own act, probably you find that you'll have a lot more cotton producers in the country. But because of the fact that it's not protected as much as sugar, that's why it's not doing that well. And I agree with everything you said in terms of how we could increase production. Studies that have been done, if we could get the funding, and then I know the department is working on that, if we get the funding to do that, more especially in those irrigation schemes, we might see some changes. But I think the DG will speak to that a lot more after the presentation. Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you. I think if you look at the agro-processing side of DTI and look at the incentives, more especially in terms of funding that is available to those companies that want to increase their production capacity, you find that people who benefit out of that in most cases are your big tiger brands and other big companies. It's never small companies, because as a small company, I don't have 500,000 to go buy a machine and then come and get tax benefits. So those companies that will have 500 million rand will always benefit. And I agree with you, we need to figure out how we ensure that those benefits also get to small producers who will then put their processing facilities in those areas that are of strategic importance. It's not possible in everything, but in some of the things like small bakeries can be done.
Maybe let's have a competition commission once, and then we take the entire questions after.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for...
We do have copies there. The hard copies in front of us. And his name is Tendengosi Bonakele. He is one of the commissioners, deputy commissioners, that's in the commission.
Once again, thank you, Chair, for giving us the opportunity to hopefully participate and enrich your discussions on this very important matter. The Commissioner himself would have wanted to be here, but he's engaged with trade-related issues today. Geneva is part of the DTI delegation there. We must start perhaps by making this bold statement that there is a crisis in our agricultural market. There is a big crisis of price fixing and abuse of market power. Hopefully you will agree with me at the end of this presentation, because I'm going to point out some of the things that lead us into making this conclusion. And hopefully we can also talk about what our respective responsibilities are with respect to this crisis and how we respond to it. I wouldn't want to bore you with history, but perhaps a starting point is the recognition that we come from a highly regulated market. If you look at this throughout the successive governments until 1994, there has been a concerted effort to make sure that the agricultural markets are heavily controlled, subsidized to some extent, especially in the earlier parts, to support particularly white farmers. Price protection, as I would call it, protection from competition and so on. This is the context within which our agricultural sector has developed. Successful in some respects, very successful actually, but within a controlled environment. Now, the deregulation which was started in the 80s and really intensified after 1994, when the democratic government came to power, was aimed at making sure that the markets are efficient. I think there was a lot of hope that efficient markets would bring benefits to consumers. So in other words, if you remove price controls, hopefully the prices would go down. Now, as you will see with a number of cases that I'm going to go through, that has not necessarily have been the case. And we can go through some of the reasons why this has not been the case. I included there slide number 2, just a comparator of price increases over a period of time from January 2008 to January 2009, and from April last year, 2008, to April 2009. Now, I'm not a statistician, and I think the Agricultural Marketing Council has already given you quite a lot of statistics that show that we've been through a lot in terms of food prices. They tend, I'm sure honorable members would agree with me, this price situation tend to be cyclical. So we've been through quite a very difficult cycle from reaching its peak 2007-2008, and I think we're starting to see a downward trend with respect to some of the key food products. But again, there's a challenge of linking the prices that we have with the cost of production. That's always been the problem. You'll see when I discuss with you issues around bread that even when you see wheat prices going down, in fact, you never find the price of bread going down. We have been monitoring this. If you check the next slide, the third slide, I have included there, I'm sorry that's not in color, but the top line, there is a markup of bread over wheat. And those little boxes that I've included are showing the extent of that gap. If you see also, I've included the wheat price, which are the dotted lines, the bigger ones, and the closer dotted lines are the that's the flour price. Now, if you look at the wheat price, just as an example of what I was mentioning, if you look there at the bottom, January to June 2008, if you go through the bottom, that would be the third period from the last. That would be January to June 2008. You're starting to see that the price of wheat falling. Although flour also falls later on, you will see it's actually quite a sharp decline. That's a long period of time, so which means that it's a fairly significant decline. But look at the price of bread. That line is consistently going up, which shows that there is a problem. Because if you are able to get wheat prices going down, flour prices going down, and the bread margin continuously goes up. I will pass the slide that looks at contributory factors, because I think that a lot of those factors are sometimes depending on where you stand. If you ask different people who are at different value chains, they will give you different reasons why food prices are going up. I'm sure this committee will also have varying views about why these prices are going up. The only thing I can talk about comfortably is that if you see the two bolded reasons about why food prices are going up, anti-competitive conduct in the agro food chain, I can talk about that because we've looked at cases that show that that has been a big contributor to food prices. Increasing input costs like fertilizer, I can also talk comfortably about that being one of the reasons contributing to food prices. I will also pass the slide that talks about the food chain because I assume everyone is familiar with that food chain. And look at the interventions that as a commission we have done. One, we've prioritized food, the food value chain, which means that we are conducting research and studies and initiating cases. And we've done this because of the impact that this sector has on consumers, particularly the poor consumers. And we've also received a number of complaints as well. So in fairness, this has not just been our own initiatives. People have been coming to us, a number of interest groups, including COSAT, who have raised concerns about food prices. So in part, we've been responsive to those calls. Major cases are in all of these sectors that are sub-sectors I've listed here: retail, bread and milling, grain storage and trading, dairy, poultry, pelagic fish, animal feed, fertilizer, and fats and oils. You can ask me questions about any of those sub-sectors, but I think time will not allow that I touch on all of them. I'm going to touch on those that I think are going to be maybe of interest to you and may enrich your discussion. One is the recent investigation that we have announced on supermarkets. We have had for some time now a public outcry about food prices, and we did receive a complaint from the milk producer organization that they are not happy about how the supermarkets are treating them. I think the figures that are being bandied around, the farmers produce milk and they would sell it for around 3 rand, but you will get it ultimately from supermarkets at about 11 rand. So they've been complaining that there's a lot of fat that's being built in the process when they are, in fact, the farmers suffering. We also, when we conducted a preliminary study, found that indeed supermarkets have a lot of buyer power. So they are very large. I think the top four supermarkets account for something like 65% of the market. And so a lot of products have to be pushed through these large supermarkets. You can't produce as a small farmer and really be effective in the market without having one of these large supermarkets as a buyer. So their buyer power is critical to what's happening to farmers and those kinds of industries that you would be concerned about. The problem with buyer power are things like the listing costs that they have. In supermarkets, if you are you want to enter the market and produce your yogurt, as an example, you would have to pay listing costs to get your yogurt in the supermarket refrigerator. Now, that tends to limit or prevent entry because unless you have all of this capital to be able to afford the listing costs, you wouldn't be able to move your product. So that's one problem you will have. There's also a lot of rebate system. Now, I have to say in fairness that there is a counter argument against in favor of large supermarkets, which is that if they are able to squeeze suppliers and get products cheaper, they are able to pass that, and I would say that's a hope, they are able to pass through those benefits to consumers. So that's one thing that we have to grapple with. So you don't have to punish them by virtue of the fact that they are large, because they could be large and that size could in fact work to the benefit of consumers. But how do you make sure that that size is not used to abuse suppliers, whom you need, by the way, because the more you squeeze suppliers out of the market, sticking to the example of milk producers, the more milk farmers get out of the market because they are squeezed by people who are buying milk, the less production of milk you are going to have as a country, and consequently the price of milk is going to go up. So you've got to always have a healthy balance between sizes of players in the value chain. There is also a problem that we have identified of long-term lease agreements. There are lease agreements of up to 20 years. So how this works is one of the supermarkets would be an anchor tenant. No one these days develops a shopping mall without having one of the major supermarkets as an anchor tenant. But because they are needed, they tend to abuse that by insisting that we don't want any other competitor in a supermarket. Now, this may be fine if you are living in the suburb in Cape Town, and there's a couple of malls you can be able to. If you want Woolies, there's a mall within the 5 kilometer radius that you can find that will have Woolies and Checkers. You will find within a short distance. But if you are in a township where a large population is dependent, say, on one shopping mall, if you are lucky enough and live in a township with a shopping mall. Now, if there is an anchor tenant who insists there that there would be no other competitors, you immediately have a competition problem because you can't have a choice. But most importantly for us, you also can't have new entrants. You can't have independent supermarkets getting space in shopping malls. This is why you find very little unbranded supermarkets or supermarkets that do not fall form part of these national chains in our shopping malls. That's a problem for us because long term you need competition for these supermarkets for them to be constrained, both in terms of how they treat suppliers and also how they price their products. There is also a bit of a complex way of arranging their marketing. A lot of marketing in supermarkets takes place by how the shelves are arranged. So what we have found is they have something they call category management, or they would appoint what is called category captains. And for an example, they would, if we use the example of, again, sticking to milk, they would take one of the milk suppliers, let's say Clover, and Clover will be required to arrange the shelf space within the supermarket, and to some extent even be involved in the marketing. So they would say, this is how this milk would appear in our shelves. You would have these brands on top, and you will have these brands below. That's problematic because that tends also to work against the smaller suppliers, obviously, because they would not take a small supplier as a category captain, because the whole motive behind this is to move supply. So they want popular brands, they want brands that have experience in moving the product. You have, again, a problem that you can't have entry if you can't move your product. But for us as a commission, we are also concerned about how this could be facilitating collusion, because if you have Clover now arranging stuff also for Parmalat and others, they are getting a lot of information from this, and they will be able to align their conduct to others. And you can have a situation where Pamela would be a category manager for Pick and Pay, and Clover would be a category manager for Shoprite. So there's a lot of alignment of interest there. It does tend to lead to these suppliers wanting to cooperate. We are also a bit concerned about the role that market intelligence consultants play. Supermarkets are constantly fed with information about the markets, about their competitors, what are the market shares, what are the trends, and so on. Now, that's a legitimate business practice, one would say, but we are concerned that that could be facilitating collusion between supermarkets. Supermarkets should be able to run specials, should be able to move goods without knowing what other competitors are doing. If you have an oversupply of particular goods and you have to move them in the market by selling them cheaper, you should be able to do that. And if you have information about what the constraints that your competitors are facing, you are unlikely to do that, if you know that it's going to impact on your margins, or you know how your competitors are going to respond. So that's why, hopefully that answers the questions about what is behind this commission's investigation on supermarkets. We've just announced this investigation, so it's a fairly fresh one. We intend to have a lot of public submissions. So we're going to be talking to the suppliers themselves. We're going to be talking to the members of the public. In fact, we would start by talking with supermarkets themselves within the next week or so. We're starting our discussions with supermarkets, and we hope that they will use this opportunity to come clean. I think it's not good to be accused of these kinds of things, especially if you are selling a basic commodity like food. So we hope that they will take that advantage and come forward. Once we've made that evaluation, we would then decide whether to prosecute this case before the tribunal or not. I must say that also another question that we get asked often is, how long are you going to take? So maybe I could anticipate that. We really don't know how long this is going to take. I can share with honorable members that our plans are to, by the end of 2010, to have completed all the investigations. But what we also intend to do is, in the short term, identify those areas where there could be change. So in these discussions we are having with supermarkets, is to try and see if we can get the conduct changed. In other words, even before we reach the conclusion of our investigation, that will tell us whether to prosecute or not. If you are able to get change in behavior, that ensures that some of these abuses do not take place. Because ultimately, what we are interested in is not just the 10% fine that we would get at the end of a very complex prosecution, but is to get this market working efficiently and eliminating abusive behavior, and ultimately that should be to the benefit of the consumers. So enough about supermarkets for now. And the other investigation, this we have completed actually, is the bread investigation. How this started is, we were tipped off that bread suppliers in the Western Cape were increasing prices simultaneously and by similar amounts. This we got from a person who owned a spaza shop and was buying bread from the bakery. Now, the bakery situation in South Africa is also quite interesting, because bakery is very easy to establish. Its entry should be very easy. To bake bread is one of the easiest things. You don't need specialist technology to do that. The equipment is readily available. You can buy ovens. People to employ don't need to be highly skilled. So producing bread should be something that is fairly easy to start getting into. But the problem we have is we have very large bakeries in South Africa, dominated by the Premier Group, the Tiger Group, Pioneer, and Food Corp. Those are the four main bakeries. In the Western Cape, all of them in these allegations were involved in this price fixing. They started by getting together because they had concerns about crates. So usually there would be a legitimate reason to get together. I want to make this point because I think most people working in agriculture say there needs to be cooperation in some of these markets. Yes, you find a lot of cooperation because you either want to market things together and those kinds of things. Here the problem was people were stealing crates. I think there was a syndicate that was exporting these plastic crates. They would recycle the plastic, and it was quite a profitable business. So they had to respond to this problem as a market. But then discussions started getting into, you know, the wheat prices are going up. How are we going to respond to that? And spiraled into even allocating customers. You know, if I increase my prices and my customers run to you, you should refuse to supply them. This is how this cartel operated. And in fact, in the hearings, the details of this were such that apparently in bread you wouldn't be able to increase prices even by a small amount, because consumers tend to be quite sensitive. So if you increase your loaf of bread by 10, 20 cents, people are likely to move to the other supplier. So it's very important for them to coordinate these increases. It's in their interest to do so. And this is exactly what happened here. It's a business that's driven by volume. It's very important that you sell in volumes. And if you shift your volumes, even for a temporary period of time, that tends to impact on the bottom line. So they are very sensitive about when to increase prices and how their competitors are going to respond to these price increases. So there is no culture of competition at all. As I said, we have completed these cases. The hearings have been now finalized before the Competition Tribunal. We are running arguments early September, final arguments, against one last respondent that's remaining. All other respondents, their cases have been completed. Pioneer is the one that where we are running final arguments. The case itself has been run, and in fact, they have admitted as much that they were involved in the cartel in the Western Cape. The only issue they seem to be raising is they were not involved in the national cartel. The other critical case for agricultural markets is the grain storage and trading. Now, I will not go through the case there, but I just want to highlight a few important issues. Grain storage, we have found that the former co-ops that, I mean, grain storage was mainly, the silos were mainly owned by co-ops. Now, these former co-ops have been privatized, so they are in private hands. And given the context of our sort of controlled markets, the co-ops have their own market. So you would find that in the Free State, there would be one dominant co-op. In the Eastern Transvaal, covering part of Gauteng, Mpumalanga, you would have one co-op there that's very dominant. Similarly, in the northwest and covering Limpopo, you would have one co-op that's dominant. Now, the problem is with grain, as you would appreciate, You actually can't do any serious commercial farming without silos. And silos are, so in that sense, are an essential facility. And it also would not make sense to duplicate silos. It would be very inefficient. They are very expensive to put up, but it would also be very inefficient if every farmer would have to own his or her own silos. So we've got to work with these silos. And I repeat that these silos were not built by private money. These silos were supported by the state, and the co-ops were eventually privatized. Now, they are dominant in all of these regions of the country. We have investigations against all of them for abuse of dominance. They are also vertically integrated. They are trading in grain. So they don't just store your grain. They also sometimes want to buy your grain. So they also control access to markets, because they say, if you store your grain with me, I'll give you this particular price. But if you don't store your grain, because there's a new technology now where you can have silo bags and those kinds of things, where you can, especially if you're a small farmer, be able to store your grain. But they say, if you don't store your grain with me, this is the price that I will give you, and that's usually a lower price. So there's a lot of things that have to be dealt with there. As I said, if honorable members are interested, we can talk about the specific cases. There's quite a lot that we can cover. Dairy, I don't want to spend too much time on dairy. Again, this is coming from a highly controlled market. In fact, the dairy farmers, the dairy processors, the processors are the ones who buy from farmers, and they would make fresh milk or cheese or whatever products like that. They are the ones that we have cases against here. We find that they are squeezing out farmers in the sense that they tell them what prices they would be buying their milk. They facilitate removal of surplus milk from the market, because milk is seasonal, so you're supposed to have seasons where you find it very cheap in the market, because you know it's summer and the cows are producing more. And but there are various schemes to remove that surplus milk by either pushing it to the regions where there's no production, or converting it into milk that could be stored, like powdered milk or cheese and that sort of thing. So those are the kinds of things that we are dealing with there. There's a lot of the milk processors have really thrown a lot of resources into these cases, and most of them are stuck in litigation. I'm not complaining, they have a right to do so, but I think you have to know. Poultry, I think I'm running out of time, I will not talk much. The concerns there in poultry. Now, poultry is the biggest, I mean, it's the cheapest source of protein we have, either in the form of eggs or in the form of milk. And, you know, when you look at volumes of people who consume poultry, we have prioritized it over and above red meat. We have a problem there again of concentration. A lot of poultry producers, they are integrated, they are producing animal feed. Now, animal feed is critical for chickens. Chickens only take just over a month to be grown, and that's a function of animal feed. So in fact, a lot of what we get from chicken is really what's been fed to that chicken. A lot of value goes into the feeding. That's right. So they are producing animal they're producing animal feed. They are into broiler, which is raising the chickens themselves, and they also market the chicken. So there's a lot of vertical integration, and I think the Agricultural Marketing Council would be interested in this, because that also tends to increase the cost of entry. I mean, chickens is also one of those areas where you should be able to have a lot of people entering the market. You should be able to produce chicken. It's not such a complicated thing. But the structure of our market is such that you can't do that you know, in a commercially viable way. The last big case I want to talk about is the fertilizer. Now, fertilizer is very important in the entire value chain, because the statistics we get here is the input cost for agricultural produce varies between 30% and up to 75% is fertilizer. So it's very critical, particularly for things like maize, wheat, grain, basically. And we are fortunate as a country in that we produce some of these important building blocks for fertilizer, like you need for maize, nitrogenous fertilizers you need for grain. The problem we have is the control that Sasol and other major fertilizer producers have in the market. Sasol produces ammonia by and large as a byproduct of its petrol fuel to coal to fuel facilities. So they're a big player, and together with the other fertilizer companies, Kynoch and Omnia and Fosco, they own import facilities for ammonia. Now, we have found that they got together, essentially. They've agreed that Sasol will supply them, so they will not produce. Even those ones who could import, they are not importing. Sasol will give them favorable terms in the line of supply, and in return, they would allocate the market, and they would squeeze out smaller fertilizer suppliers. So you have a lot of, between Fosco, for example, and Sasol, you have an arrangement that Fosco will focus on some fertilizers, but by and large explosives, and Sasol will focus on producing all of these nitrogenous fertilizers, and they would supply each other. The problem is, a lot of innovation, you mix fertilizers, you improve them, you add some value. A lot of that value add come from the smaller fertilizer companies we have found, both in terms of the product and in terms of the price. These are the companies that are not that are being disadvantaged in the line of supply. Sasol has come through, as most honorable members would have heard, has come through to admit its conduct, and they have paid the highest penalty we've charged so far, $250 million. But critical for us, that case is important, but it's not critical for us. Critical for us is the abuse of dominance cases we have against Sasol. They have come forward saying they want to negotiate with us. Sasol charges what is referred to as import parity price. They charge farmers, inland farmers, a price as though they have imported the product from somewhere in the Middle East to our ports. But not only that, but also inland transport from the port to Secunda or somewhere in the country. Now, the problem with that is a lot of farming that takes place inland, all of those costs are not incurred. So this is, for us, this is what we're negotiating with Sasol, and is critical for fertilizer prices going forward. And the jury is still out as to how far Sasol will be willing to change its pricing behavior. Now, as I conclude, we, I hope you now would agree with me that there is indeed a crisis. I didn't take you through all of these markets because of time limitations. I have hopefully taken you through the most dramatic demonstration of some of these abuses. We, as the Commission, this means that our work is cut out because we've got to get to the bottom of these things. The unfortunate confession that I think we must make is we can't fix all of these problems. Some of these problems do require a sensitive but vigorous regulatory oversight. The problem we have as a country is we have deregulated and left everything to the markets. And what we have found, and I've taken you through various industries, milk is a particular example. You have public regulation replaced by private regulation. This is essentially what is happening here. Now, it's not for me to say what's the role of government going to be or the role of parliament going to be, but I can share with you the experience we've had talking to our international counterparts. We're doing a lot of work in infrastructure and construction, so we have been speaking to the Dutch about some of their work on infrastructure. Now, they have found that more than 1,000 construction companies have been involved in price fixing. There is no competition authority that's going to cope with more than 1,000 cases in one sector. So the problem is endemic. And it was Parliament that summoned the executives of the construction companies and said, this thing must be sorted out by the industry, and if the industry can't sort this out, we will have to come in with regulation. I can count numerous examples where there have been market failures and where even the threat of regulation has been enough to get industry participants to change their behavior. I think you would agree with me that fixing prices of bread, and now you are going to have a tribunal judgment, honorable member, you will have a tribunal judgment that confirms that prices of bread have been fixed. Hopefully you will have a judgment once we've run through the case that there's been all of these things that I've been talking about in milk. The question is, what are all these various instruments as a society? What are they doing? I have explained what the Commission is doing, and we are engaging with the Department of Agriculture about some of the things that we think they should be doing. I think that there is a lot of work that's also cut out for this Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Ramoulana. I'm not sure if anybody wants to add from the protector side and also from the consumer forum side. If anybody has arrived from the consumer forum, nobody. You want to just say a word or two?
Mr. Protector? Chairperson, I wanted to make a request before wrapping up on Millis. Because some of us were from the deep rural areas of Limpopo, and our people depend solely on mill. So I wanted to get just.
We will come to all of those questions and areas that need. I just thought perhaps if we could just wrap up the presentation so that we are able to come with all the questions. Whilst you have any additions or wrapping up the issues from the protector and DG? Nothing. Okay, that then allows us to engage with the two presentations. And I hope that Mr. Bosman you did hear Mr. Ramabulana saying, you know, free market really, you know, and deregulation really, you know.
I would like to maybe put something on it.
Let's start off with Ms. Mabuza, and then we'll come back to you, Mr. Postman. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted to ask the presenter to say something on millets, especially that the prices of millets are going up. A bag of 80 kg of millet is around 380 rand, and our people can't afford that, except in the areas of Venda where a lot of small farming is taking place. Can we really touch on that? Thank you.
Mr. Bosman?
Thank you very much. I think this was very interesting, presentations, and I think from my side also, obviously, we have been working with this for quite a number of years and understand the issue. As you can well see, it is quite a complex issue, and the reasons for that is very complex. As I said, it comes from international situation and flowing down to South Africa and also other developing countries sitting with the same problem. Also in the free market system, which is the whole of the world is determined and dominated by the free market system. But what I want to come back to, and I've alluded to this in all of my speeches so far in Parliament, and I've actually dedicated quite a bit on the agricultural debate on the international market system, and why are we not sort of adhering and going along with the recommendations of the WTO, especially on the Doha round. And I think what Mr. Ramabulana has pointed out today again just confirms what I've said, and that is actually so that within this whole system, South Africa has a mechanism and has the tools to help the local market to come out of this dilemma that we're sitting in. And we're not making use of it. And I would really, once again, maybe just very shortly, stress the point, and we keep on coming back to wheat and the bread prices, as well as the cotton. And coincidentally, the cotton is not only for South Africa. Fortunately, we've got the economist from the department here as well. But you know that the Doha round has focused specifically on the cotton issue internationally, and they, because of the fact that the rest of the world is so effective in producing cotton that we, and also subsidizing it to such an extent that we cannot compete against it. And even opening up the markets from the States for our cotton from Africa has not solved the problem. So what is the real problem then? Obviously, effectiveness of production is one of the issues that they have pointed out, and I think we must accept it, that in some areas we cannot be competitive, and that we will have to move away from it. And that has also caused the wheat situation. In South Africa, we have not protected our wheat industry. At the moment, still, we see that we are importing a third of the wheat that is used in South Africa. In other words, for every three breads that are sold, one is imported. The reason for that is quite simple, and I think it shows in the graphs that the local producers are not protected against international prices of food, of wheat, which is produced at a very low cost and high subsidized. Once we cannot compete and make a living or make a profit from that production of wheat, the farmers leave it and they go to other commodities. And that is what we should recognize. And I think what we should do, and we've got the facility in ITAC, which must look at these issues, but they do not implement the request and really look objective to the request that was put from the commodity groups. On this issue. The result is now that we sit with high bread prices, which comes directly from imported wheat, which has gone, of which the prices have increased tremendously over the last couple of years. if I would like to then go to this presentation of the Department of no, the other one, the Marketing Board, they've got the reports on the Section 70 Committee investigation on the Norwegian Beef chain. And it absolutely spells out what the problems are there. And I think we should take notice of it and maybe try and fix it. Because, I mean, that will only, in this specific instance, help us. But on the other hand, I also would like to stress my concern about the situation of big companies, you know, taking advantage of their strong positions and push out the rest of the competition in the market. And I think that has also been highlighted today to us. Unfortunately, they are making the big prices. If you look at the graphs which was shown on the input side, the correlation between input and the price of the producers. The producers are in some instances not being able to produce effectively, and I think especially the small-scale farmers, if they are not getting a price for their product, then obviously they cannot produce it in a sustainable manner. So we have really got a problem, and we will have to, as a committee, look very seriously at the solutions as far as this is concerned and support the Department of that they can maybe help us on some of the issues. Just that comment, I don't have any questions because I know what the problem is.
Thank you, Mr. Bosman. Now, for Mr. Gaylor, do you have questions? Mr. Gaylor.
Chairperson, it's just a comment. Temingos is talking the truth. The fact with the small bakeries, these guys open these bakeries, but the control of the wheat prices destroys them. We'll get them coming up, they'll be there for 6 months, and they cannot market their produce. So it just goes on and on because of the control of these prices. Then it's all over construction industry, all over the big guys are just controlling everything. But there was a comment, from the gentleman over here, about Noha. Basically, Noha is one of the best schemes that you could ever have. But the problem really is with agriculture, national, not provincial. They assist Noha with 3 million, and the infrastructure is gone in Noha. Not only Noha, Umicore. All those schemes are gone down the drain because there's no proper assistance. Those schemes, the former Transkei and the border area used to survive through those schemes. But it is the assistance that is not done properly and is not monitored. We went there as a committee from agriculture from the Eastern Cape, Honorable Abrams. They were assisted with 3 million just for pipes only. And all that money has gone down. I think you need to have a look how the assistance pattern is. Because the best is to assist the scheme and see that it takes off properly. That is the best solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gaylor. Now,
Chair, thank you very much. I want to start off with the Competition Commission. Firstly, I want to thank both presenters for what I would think an excellent presentation. Chair, basically our problem is that, you know, this word called greed. And if one looks at all these presentations, one finds that the people that are involved in these industries And especially the guys at the end of the value chain are all driven by greed. You know, the CEO of the supermarket chain wants to post a good result so that that can influence the amount of money he can earn. And if we look at the salaries that these guys earn, Chair, it is way, 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 way above what a country like South Africa can really afford in real terms. But they do this at the expense of the majority of the people who are poor. Having said that, Chair, I would like the Competition Commission to give us some other indication. If you take, for example, many of these national franchises, and I want to mention one since we're talking of food. You take, for example, Kentucky. Kentucky is a controlled environment. You cannot, Chairperson, go to Kentucky now and say that you found a place and your market research says that there's room for a Kentucky and expect them to do a deal with you on a franchise. They've already designated certain areas to only certain groups of people. And those groups of people are not the previously disadvantaged, the majority of them. We need to look at that seriously, the conduct of franchisors in keeping certain groups of people out. And let's face it, these are national chains. I mean, if you're hungry, you'll stop here at Kentucky and buy a two-piece for $19.90. Or whatever, it's a cheap meal, and it's also a healthy meal. So we need to look at that to see that we can promote our people, Chair. Chair, the other problem also is that you look at the auctioneering industry, especially livestock auctioneering. You will find that if a black producer brings animals to that auction, they will purposely see that his animals are auctioned last. By that time, the buyers have already bought what they want. And his animals go for a pittance. A poor guy has worked hard for those few animals to be brought to the auction. This is what happens to him. We need to look at that industry to see in what way does it benefit our people. Chair, with regard to the whole question of the conduct of price fixing, especially with the big boys. I've said that there the motive is greed. What do we make at the end of the day? What profits do we post? In the process, Chair, we have in South Africa over the years lost about 23,000 to 24,000 dairy farmers. Dairy farming in the past was part of an agricultural setup, of an agricultural enterprise, because dairy farming provided a cash income at the end of the month. Other crops took time. I mean, you had to wait for the mealies to grow and dry and then reaped and all that. So dairy farming was an integral part. Today, Chair, you are left with 3,600 dairy farmers. And dairy farmers are pulling out of the industry at the rate of about one per day. If you look at the agricultural magazines, you will find auction sales of dairy farmers on a regular basis. It is happening. We need to do something drastic to arrest this tendency. Otherwise, Chair, we will become a country that is totally dependent on not subsidized by us, but exports that are subsidized by the countries where it comes from. So we are going to create... You must bear one thing in mind, Chair. Every dairy farmer that goes out of business, with him goes at least 10 to 15 workers who then end up in the informal settlements. I represent and come from a rural area. I know what I'm talking about. This is what you see there on a daily basis. It is a grave situation. And, Chair, what happens is that these guys, they throttle you as a producer. You are actually in this value chain. It's not only the supermarket that throttles you. You've got the likes of Parmalat and Clover and all these big guys. They throttle you. And the price that they offer you these days is such that you cannot produce milk at that price. If you look at your input costs, your labor, everything else, you cannot produce it at that price. And Chair, I had always thought that dairy farming, with all the infrastructure that is lying around throughout the country, dotted around throughout the country, could have been a good entry point for emerging farmers, because there would be an income at the end of the month after they've sort of got themselves going. But unfortunately, I would be very loath to advise our people to go into dairy farming at the rate that it's going. Unless, Chair, we can promote an idea where we have these little shops, a dairy, a local dairy in every suburb, every town in the country, where people can supply the milk to, and where our people can get those products at a reasonable price. I mean, the important products. Chair, I don't know if I've still got a bit of time just to make one or two comments, but Chair, I want to plead that the Competition Commission has raked in large sums of money in terms of fines. Now, with the fines that you raked in terms of bread, don't you want to speak to your principals? Can't we use that funding to help new entrants establish small little bakeries in the villages and towns in the countryside? In that way, promote the availability of a cheaper product, the availability of jobs to people, we will be making a real contribution. And I'm not saying, Chair, that we must give them an unconditional grant. Make available the funds at a very reasonable interest rate. Assist those people to establish themselves. In that way, I feel that this committee will be making a meaningful contribution towards seeing to it that we at least uplift the poorest of the poor. Chair, final one. If we go to our townships, you will find that there has always been the traditional little spaza shop. Those spaza shops, and I'm not being xenophobic, but I'm telling you what happens on the ground and what the people tell you. Those spaza shops are taken over now by and large by people who are not South African citizens. And what is happening is that those people are not registered for VAT. They are by and large not registered as individual taxpayers, whereas the ordinary South African who runs a little spaza shop is. That ordinary South African is being squeezed out because his overheads are higher. And here is something that is looming that will cause a major havoc in our country if we don't watch it and if we don't attend to it timelessly. Now, I don't know what DTI can do to it, but perhaps you can speak to the department that rakes in all the money in the country and perhaps tell them that there is an unfair competition taking place there. Those people need to be registered. I don't deny them the right to run businesses, since we've allowed them into our country, but then we must see that they are subject to the same conditions that our citizens are subjected to. Thank you very much, Chair. If there's another round, I'll take it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. You see, for me, the simple issue gets to be a matter that says, here you have a paraffin being sold, and the price goes up at one point, and then from a garage, and when it goes down, you know, announced, you know, by the Minister for Minerals and Energy, now Energy. Now, but out there in the township, in the rural areas, it never goes down. It remains up. And when it goes up again, up it goes.
including your taxi industry. The prices, when they go up, with petrol prices going up, but as and when the prices go down, there is no ripple effect out there. The cascading effect is not felt out there by that end user, that consumer. And for me, the issues really, they are so much linked to what all of you have been presenting. How does that consumer get to be protected? That very, very end user. I hear you are saying something from NMSC, National American Council. There's a food pricing monitoring committee that has been set up by government. But how does that help that end user? Yes, we're going to have all of these statistics out there and all of these fancy reports out there. But for as long as they don't have an impact to that end user, to me, they are as good as simply just, you know, reports that are there, files, gathering dust and so on. Precisely because hence we also invited the consumer forum here, because we thought perhaps with bodies like those, we should be able to, I don't know whether they did arrive finally, are they here? They couldn't, I take it that they are not here anymore. Now, for me, that's a major issue. And unfortunately, in our country, we still and continue to have a consumer who is not active enough, and we're very complacent. Anything that you're given, even if it, you know, satisfied, it's fine. You know, you go, off you go. Now, if you travel out of the country elsewhere, especially in Europe and the U.S., you have there very, very activist consumers who are going to stand their ground on any matter. And again, the saying goes, the consumer is always right. Now, these are the issues that I'm very keen on, very, very troubled with. At the end of the day, that consumer must be the beneficiary of any. You've just painted a very good picture about the price of flour, the price of a wheat that goes down, but the price of bread, forever it goes up. Mechanisms of ensuring that that consumer at the end of the day benefits. If you could respond, also comment on that one.
I think we will both respond to that question, but it's, I think the problem to me, I mean, let me paint a picture to you. In 1996, when we deregulated and farmers had to compete, you found that a lot of farmers moved out of production, but there are a whole host of farmers who grew, and some of them came into agriculture. But if you are a farmer and you are producing a cattle and you are selling that animal for 3,000, and you have a farmer next door who can produce and sell for 2,500, the buyer will go buy for the one that is worth 2,500. So you were forced to be as competitive as possible in order for you to stay in business. That's why all farmers in the country, basically all farmers are price takers. That's why you find farmers who go to a fresh produce market, supply their products, and the best product will fetch the best price. Then you have all these farmers who are supplying their wheat to one silo that is owned by one company in a specific area. So we then deregulated and said, okay, we're going to hit these farmers as much as possible, but we're not going to worry about the rest of the industry, the rest of the value chain. and then we sit down and say, okay, the price of food should come down. It's not going to happen. As long as the entire village is not competitive, it's not going to happen. You can find them as much as you want, it's not going to happen. To me, the answer is it's simple. How to ensure that the entire village chain, not just farmers, become competitive? And that's the bottom line. How do you make sure that me as a farmer who's interacting with the rest of the village chain have choices where I am and are able to supply to the person who give me the best price? Because that will force whoever is handling the product or processing it to be as efficient and competitive as possible, and they will pass those benefits to the end consumer. At the moment, it's not happening because the only person in the entire value chain who's trying as much as possible to be efficient and competitive is the farmer, who gets absolutely, in some cases, very little support. If I'm a company and I'm fine and I want to improve my processing facility, I can go to DTI and get support in terms of buying new or fresh equipment so that I become efficient. Farmers don't get anything. That's the problem. And as long as we don't do that, we can sit and talk as much as possible, but we want the price of bread to come down. It's not going to happen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe before I specifically deal with questions, I should say that we, as we are running these cases, we do have a lot of information that comes up. And we appreciate the fact that we've been invited to share some of these things with the committee. And insofar as there may be any other information that's required by the committee, I do want to make that point that we do have a whole lot of our processes are such that we generate a whole lot of information. I say that because I think that everyone should be engaged with these matters. I've made a point earlier on that we have made choices. We've made certain choices. We've prioritized, say, on meat. We've said we're looking at poultry. It doesn't mean that there is no problem with pork or red meat and those kinds of industries. But I'm only working with a staff of about 100 people, so we've got to make some of these choices. So we look at what we think will have the greatest impact, particularly amongst the poor. Things like mealie meal, for example, are some of the cases that we have, and I'll talk about that soon. But insofar as you may need information on any of these sectors, I'm saying at any time, I'm sure we would facilitate that you get that, or if you need us to come talk to you, we would be very honored to do that. Yes, we do have, we are looking at maize meal, we're looking at milling in general. The problem there again are that the milling companies, you have milling, there's about four companies that are responsible for about 90% of milling in the country. So there's high concentration there, highly dependent on a few companies. And incidentally, these are the companies that are also vertically integrated to produce bread and those kinds of things. You would find them in all of these things, and they would be concentrated in varying degrees. We have a case against, we're concentrating on these four, but all of them in milling seem to have been coerced by these four companies into a cartel. As I said, that's the case that we are currently running, so I'm a bit skeptical of getting into the details, lest I get accused of running the case through Parliament. But we are alleging that they've fixed prices. In fact, we have heard some of them admitting to that effect. So it is true that if at that level prices are fixed, that will have an impact on the prices going down. As I said, what this tends to do, it doesn't mean that prices wouldn't go up at all, but what this tends to do is at times when production costs go down, you will never find prices go down. That's the effect that we tend to observe. When they are squeezed by other high production costs and so on, they would get together and say, how do we manage this? But once the production costs go down, they don't get together and say, okay, now everyone is happy, let's see how we pass on this down. So a cartel always works in favor of the cartelist. It never works in favor of the consumer. So that's part of the problem. In terms of fine, the honorable member, you are putting me on the spot, because the fines, as you all know, go to the Treasury, and that's legislation. I think if there are ideas coming from Parliament about how we could utilize those fines, I think that's the debate that more appropriately belongs to the line departments and Parliament. But the point that I would agree with you on is I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to sponsor entry. As we have debated that things like bakering, for example, you can easily have entry in bakering. The Commission can deal with the stranglehold can break the cartels. But once you break the cartels, what happens afterwards? You need entry, because otherwise the cartel will be reconstituted. You always need someone to undermine the cartel. If you have three producers and they are used to working together, you break the cartel. Now I agree with Mr. Ramagula. You can fine them as much as you want. They will get back together again. So the best way to undermine that is to make sure that the markets are competitive, sponsor entry, get people to get together to produce bread. And bread should really be local market, so you should be able to have local bakeries. But what we've seen is, as soon as I think the Honorable Mr. Gela is, I would agree 100%, as soon as you have a bakery coming out in a local area, you will find that they will drop the price. In fact, they will be predating on that. We have a case of a bakery in Mossel Bay. It's a classic predatory case where they've dropped the prices below costs and are now offering to acquire that small bakery. So you do find those kinds of abuses. The challenge of prices consistently going up is, I think, a challenge that all of us face. I mean, I think the department, for example, regulating paraffin and so on, I think they need to follow up to make sure that their regulations are adhered to. If you are regulating the price of paraffin, you need to make sure that regulation, the effect of that regulation, is felt at all levels of the value chain. That's the challenge that all of us have who are regulators, to make sure that there is compliance with regulation. It's partly a function, I think, of resources. But the challenges are immense. I admit that we have not dealt with anything. We have not even looked at taxes. That we haven't done, admittedly. I mean, taxes, they would allocate routes. You will not compete there if you don't belong to that taxi association. But because we think there's a Department of Transport that should be coming in with proper regulation and so on, we think that someone is taking care of that, hopefully. And so we make those choices. Like, as I said, I think in most of these markets, the best that we could do, because we all have limited resources and are looking at a variety of things. The best that I think needs to happen is we all need to be engaged with processes. I think we all need, we all have a role to play. I think we should be asked questions about what we are doing. I think it's also fair to, I have my sound here that I've been calling for regulation. I'm not. I'm calling for engagement. I'm saying if there's fixing of prices by bread manufacturers, I think we should be all held accountable, including the companies. You know, I don't think it's not only a problem of regulators. The companies themselves also need to be able to explain and be accountable for their behavior. And that's my point. Thanks.
If I may, from a consumer protection perspective, you were absolutely correct in that consumers in South Africa are not vocal. Through our experience at the department and in the offices of consumer protection in particular, we have found that consumers do not react, they do not ask questions. And what we have done for this year is we're embarking on campaigns, and the problem is particularly worse in the outlying, rural, poor, marginalized areas, where suppliers would dump goods that they can't sell anywhere else, or where goods have probably had expiry dates that are approaching closely, and people in the rural areas don't read these expiry dates and then they flog. So all those kinds of abuses do take place. What we do in my office, what we've done is we're embarking on quite a large campaign to make consumers more aware of their rights. A new Consumer Protection Act was passed in April this year. It establishes a National Consumer Commission, which will be independent, which will be enforcing the Act, and which will have to be fully operational from next year, October. There's a requirement in the Act that the National Consumer Commission facilitates and assists in building the consumer voice in this country, that is the NGO and the NGO sector. There is a requirement, not a requirement, there is a stipulation in Section 48 which says that suppliers should not supply goods which prices are unreasonable or unfair. So there's a requirement for monitoring of prices within, in the new Act and so on. So, but this will only happen from October next year. Currently, we administer an Unfair Business Practices Act, which is an after-the-fact act, when businesses have already, when there's a failure in the market, when there's problems, we go in, we investigate, and then we regulate to stop the conduct. But in the new act, there'll be lots of provisions which prohibit conduct of crime and so on. Thank you. I just wanted to make that comment.
Members, maybe one other thing that we also need to do, especially dealing with such a matter that we are dealing with now, which is price fixing, we also need to really look closely on our role as members of parliament, to a point where we don't only interrogate or ask questions, you know, clarity and so on. We also get to craft a way forward for ourselves as to how best do we deal with this problem. It is a problem, just to give an example, which I'm sure all of us are aware of, when I was making a reference about paraffin. I use a paraffin heater, preferably. You buy a liter of paraffin from a garage for about almost 4 rand or so. But when you go out there in the township, a liter of paraffin, you don't pay anything less than 9 rand. Now that's what I'm referring to when I was making an example about paraffin, and also monitoring the implementation. When paraffin price goes down, it remains. When it goes up in the township, it goes up again. For 2 liters, you pay no less than 20 rands a time. Now that's a problem that we're confronted with. Granted, the hands might be tied from the side, but ours are not tied. Hence, therefore, I'm saying have a close look at our role as to what next are we expecting as public representatives. We are representatives of the public out there that is crying foul. Prices are going up all the time and so on and so forth. They have our hopes, their hopes in us. And as a result, therefore, as we say all the time, we are lawmakers. Let's make those laws. So that we don't only get to hear what the executive through its agencies and departments tell us. Equally, as we are lawmakers, we need to engage with them and get to say, among others, how do we make sure that that business out there in the township, that business out there in that farm, must to a regulation. Mention is being made here about deregulation that happened, and all in the name of trying to say, you know, let everybody flourish in a free market and so on. But what has become very clear is that we need to tighten up with more regulation so that we don't find ourselves continuously in this situation which we are in as we speak now. Yeah, I saw your hand to ask Mr. Geda and Mr. Sumo.
Thank you, Chair. I think you gave the solution to us. We now know what is the problem. The only solution is now we must have a solution to the problem. You've mentioned making laws, stuff like that. I was thinking now, when I was still very young, there was a thing like price control. Where you had to pay a certain price, they gave on certain items. Yeah, price control, like I think sugar, milk, I'm not sure. Abraham, maybe you can help me, you can remember. There was quite a few items where they had price control. You couldn't overcharge. You were shocked people would charge these things. Maybe food stuff, you see. And that's maybe one of the solutions we can look to, where we regulate more the prices in making laws. So, but I think what we must do is we must explore all the possibilities, how we can solve this problem to protect the consumer and the farmer. I think that will be our main aims, the farmer or the producer and the consumer. And maybe we can solve the problem. Thank you.
No, Chairperson, you said a mouthful, I think. But what I was going to suggest is that we must have contact details, because what you are saying does happen out there in the villages, that the prices, they don't go down, they remain the same, they remain high. But to assist those people, we must have the contact numbers of the consumer controllers as well. So if you can assist us with that. You are right, it is our duty to make the laws. Thank you.
Yeah, just to Mr. Ramabulana on this slide here, issues and developments in South Africa. You have referred to challenges with land reform implementation have affected investment in agriculture. Could you perhaps just enlarge on that? In what way has it affected investment in agriculture, and aligned to that, could you perhaps tell us whether the NAMC, perhaps in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture, have done any studies on many of the failed projects, and what it would cost the country to get failed projects resuscitated again? Whether there's an overall study done or whether it was done in a particular area. Finally, Chair, I agree with you, Chair, with what you've said. Question now is, what is our way forward? Here we have a population which is losing jobs by the dozen. Poverty is, instead of being working towards elimination, it is increasing. And here we have, on the other hand, the greedy guys in the business who have the muscle to push up prices. I'm afraid if we don't address the situation in a practical way, a tangible way, our country can head towards food riots. I know many people wouldn't like us to talk that way, but I think one must be honest. A hungry stomach. You take the high levels of criminality in our country, and you listen to the criminologists and everyone else, and they will tell you. You take the abuse of women and children. They will tell you that the breadwinner has lost a job and he's now sitting around at home, nothing to do, and no money to buy food, and he brings it out on the poor wife and children and things like that. So these things have a cumulative effect. And then you have these prices that escalate all the time, and yet the farm gate price is not really changing. We need to think very, very innovatively. You as officials in your capacities, and we as politicians. And we need to find a way forward. Absolutely vital and important before we move into the abyss. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is directed to Mr. Ramakumlana, but it's not a question, it's just a concern. In one of your slides, you said one import. As a country, we are not putting cotton and beans and many other things. But my worry is that we have many farms under Iraq, and those farms, and I'm here because the department is here, and those farms, you know, they are doing nothing. Can't maybe the department look at that? Because I think in South Africa there is a lot of cotton. I think in South Africa there is a lot of beans. Mm-hmm. Only the land doesn't, you know, people doesn't use the land so that the land can profit. And maybe another thing is that many farmers, those who are farming, especially white farmers, you know, they turn their farmers into game farming. I think that also are affected in farming. But what is important is the land under Elrath. A lot of land are under Elrath. Those land doesn't do anything. Department, please look into that so that we must not even import cotton and beans, whereas we can just do it ourselves. Thank you.
Now, just on the way forward, I think this cuts across the different committees. It's not only agriculture. We from the same province. You know very well in the early 80s, a teacher could buy a house in town. That does not happen now. This price fixing that we're talking about. Same applies with public works. You'll find that the emerging contractors that are lower grade, but those big ones remain the So as a way forward, I would suggest that we will need to have a committee, a meeting with all the different committees so that we craft a proper way forward that will assist everybody. Because this cuts across different committees. That is the truth of the matter. It's affecting our people. So I think the way forward is that you meet with the different chairpersons of the committees so that we can meet and craft a proper way forward that will assist everybody. Thank you.
Another example, something outside of our domain here, would be the bank charges. This country's bank income comes to charges. Those account for no less than 51%. Of course, it's still a report that must still come. Now you have your major four banks that are really, you know, setting the standard. Of course, you do have other smaller ones that are still following what the major banks are doing. And maybe also what we might wish to do, perhaps TG, when you respond, you take all of those. A point being made about a deregulated, you know, industry. Of course, there's minimum, you know, regulation, especially when it comes to some of those entities that also have to be sold out to private hands, the co-ops you make reference to. I am still keen to hear a practical solution to a problem of pricing. Granted, you have all these, you know, structures. We are now going to have a competition, what do you call it, a national consumer commission that must do. But for me, for as long as the, especially out there in the rural communities and also in the townships, where an example that I've just made about paraffin, that father shop there continuously raising the price. While the price has gone down of paraffin for 5 liters, you know, at the garage you will pay no more than 30 rand, but out there in the township you will pay no less than 50 rand. So that's a criminal, for lack of a better word. Now, I'm still keen to hear, of course, these are issues that are supposed to take us forward. And that's also from the department's point of view, and also from the Competition Commission, and also your TTI's protector. We hear practical solutions on way forward as being proposals that must be brought for these committees in Parliament to look into. Of course, we also do have our own writers' Parliament. To generate our own, you know, laws for that matter. As we say, we are law makers. We should really take serious advantage of what we have in this current administration. We are told that we should and must indeed be enacted as Parliament. President Zuma, who's our president, all of us, has given that as that instruction that this time around, we must do things in an unusual manner, all aimed at making sure that service delivery is felt by people out there. That's the crux of what we are about. Nothing more and nothing less.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I'd just like to go through some of the issues that have been raised, particularly around the agricultural production. Indeed, from the tone of our strategic plan that we presented to Honourable Members, our main focus is on increased agricultural production. We've raised concerns about the land that is lying fallow, underutilized, even with the post-settlement support that has not been quite effective over time. But as you present our plan moving forward, you talked about this one-stop shop where we need to consolidate the funding base. Because as long as we are having a piecemeal approach, a small cash peer, very limited resources from Masisa, where the banking institutions are finding our farmers unbankable, and therefore will not be even be considered for a grant or loan. So I think in a way we've accepted that there are quite challenges in terms of supporting your farmers in terms of your agricultural inputs. And I think that is one way we are working towards with the different partners, the banking institutions themselves and the input suppliers to ensure that there is access at least to those agricultural inputs. The land is there, and I think the commitment is there. You just need to ensure that those who can farm and have access to the market and have access to the technical inputs, hence the one-stop shop that we'll be talking to. Another one has also talked about our strategies that are in place with the various commodity groups. We're talking to the Grain South Africa in terms of creating this partnership, in terms of mentorships. We're also looking to the cotton industry, as already said earlier on. We have a better understanding of what the challenges are within those particular sectors with the dairy and as well with the feed industry. Because it is very, very clear that until we increase the agricultural production, only then we will be able to address some of the problems. But I think one of the slides presented by our colleagues from the NAMC is around the value addition on your agro processing. As much as you produce, but if you do not add value and the beneficiation to the product, we will still remain our figures in the end of indicate that we are still a net importer of food, and yet maybe the intervention that is required at any particular point in time is all the agro-processing and the value addition. And of course, one of our outputs within the economic cluster with the Department of with the DTI is the value, the big beneficiation and value adding on our products. My last comment is on the honourable members is on this topic, the role of the consumer, and saying I think we need to continuously create awareness around these issues. I think 2-3 years ago, no one could have even imagined that the Competition Commission would be talking to the retailers about the prices of food and some of your basic products. I think using such instruments as the Competition Commission will help us at least to create that awareness that we do not just maintain the status quo, and that the role of both the department and the role of the parliamentary the members to continuously bring on board, continuously make us aware of some of these issues. And once they end up in the public domain, then they can better debate and engagement. And I would imagine, that even some of those things also begin to respond better. But we need to bring this, remain in the public domain. So there's continuous pressure on all sides so that we can get better responses. But in concluding, from our side, our strategic plan, as we say, is we are taking it to national treasury, talking about the rehabilitation of and revitalization of the irrigation schemes. It is true that I remember we've had a plan for over the last 10 years, well costed, on how to rehabilitate these irrigation schemes, including the Daung, the Van Hart, and the Makatini flats. But all the time we've fallen short of the financial resources to support these schemes. And I think moving forward, we do have to have some creative mechanisms of financing these schemes. Not all of it would come from the fiscal, as you are all aware, working within the recession, but having to get better investments, getting the private sector, investing in the agricultural sector, and we're able to rehabilitate some of those things. I think.
expand a little bit on the land reform investment that was mentioned in our presentation. I can't quote huge figures, but as a person who is a farmer myself, who lives in an area where some of the land reform projects are based, it's a matter of, you know, farming is a very lonely business. Once you are a farmer and you are on the farm, if you don't have money for the pesticide in the morning when you are checking your cabbages, and that's just your crop. If you don't have what it takes to invest when it should be happening. But more than that, if there are so many of you who all have a claim to run this farm, and some of you just cannot do it, then it means the few or the two who remain there have the burden of doing it. So I think from the Portfolio Committee and South Africa as a whole, the land reform projects are a real challenge, and I don't think we can address them globally. Each one has its own specific challenges that need to be addressed. The department, I know from working with them that they have, at least in the past year, 18 months, for the small scale farmers, they do have Mafisa funds that are beginning to be available. But those funds have to be available when the farmer needs them. For the commercial side of the large tract of land, I really think it is not possible to have the mentors being the people who are paid and running the scheme. Agricultural production is slightly more than this, and it's a very serious program. It's a very serious problem that I think that the stakeholders, our portfolio committee, the department, the funder, everyone needs to really sit down and say, how do we move on this? So when we were talking about the land reform investment not making it, I think everyone in the country recognizes that. But we also, as we solve them, and with the NAMC, we can only do it from the marketing side. But because we believe that we start the production from the market, we find the market and we grow to the specifics of the market, then it means in all solving this, we must remember that agriculture depends on seasons, except where we have irrigation systems. But more than that, it depends on the market and the availability of the people to work the land and to have the resources when the season demands it, not when the resources, through whoever has the resources, can avail them. And I think those, I think in a few words, those are the real challenges that we are dealing with at the NAMC, with the other stakeholders, to say let's have the resources available for production and the market when the market.
Maybe in conclusion, among others, we also need to hear the department maybe next time around. The country has prioritized, among others, engineering and economy for support in terms of education. I would imagine, for instance, economics will also have agriculture in that. But from an agriculture point of view, we also need to say, when we talk about, you know, us being, you know, the net importer of processed products and so on, we are also raising challenges there, because at some point, you know, exporters and so on, and both of primary and also, you know, finished products. But the situation has changed, you know, 200,000 hectares of cotton produce, you know, now to almost 15,000 hectares, a piece of land for cotton production. whether we are not able, I mean, the list is long, from dairy farming, you know, almost 2,500, you know, or 3,600 at some point, you know, but now the number since has dropped to whatever number. No, they have since now dropped to 3,600. But the point I'm raising here, TG, is that we need as a country, especially from where you are seated, to say these are the focus areas that we really need to begin to work on. Our role also does not only just get to be, you know, monitoring and so on, also enhancing, you know, that delivery, not just, you know, asking questions and interrogating. How best can we do it? You might have your own limitations. We certainly do not have those limitations from where we are seated. We need to give you specific times for you to come back. As to how you do all of those things, that's a detail that you must really work on. Now that's the kind of, you know, situation that I would imagine we need to look into going forward, so that next time around when we gather, we are able to get a sense of, you know, focus. Yes, your third plan does allude to a number of those issues, a number of them. We might wish to be able to talk about a focus when it comes to agriculture. And then of course also the matter related to consumer protection is very, very critical. We also need to hear what is it practically that we are going to do over and above your commission, because that person out there in that rural area, in that street, in the townships, really must be able to see that, you know, there is delivery. Changes of prices, they have an impact on his or her own. Well, that is going to mean extra money for that person to spend on something else, highly required for that person's lifestyle and so on. Now, those are the issues that we certainly need to engage in, perhaps when we come back, you know, next time around. I think that should take us to the end of our session for now, members. And hopefully that we are going to make a forward movement.